Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, February 24th. Happy Monday, but did you know that it's already Super Tuesday? Officially, Super Tuesday is 8 days from now, right? Tuesday, March 3rd. But early voting is already underway in some of the biggest Super Tuesday states, including California, Texas, and Massachusetts, and more than 2 million votes have already been cast. Here are some numbers from the Nevada caucuses. Bernie Sanders got 47% of the final popular vote. He got about a third of the vote in the first round, then was enough people's second choice in round two to lift him to that better-than-expected 47%. Getting almost the majority in such a crowded field is a real accomplishment that very few people predicted. Now, Joe Biden came in second with 20% of the votes. The winner in delegates was also Sanders then, with 18 delegates. Biden was next with just 7. Buttigieg got 2 delegates, and the rest got 0. Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Tom Steyer, all with 0 delegates. In Steyer's case, according to NPR, the billionaire had spent $16 million there, or two-thirds of all the ad money in the state. Another way to put that is he spent twice as much as all the other candidates combined in Nevada, and he got 0 delegates. The Sanders coalition was especially newsworthy compared to his past results in terms of who is in the coalition. We'll get into that in a minute. With me now, Beth Fooey, senior editor for politics at NBC News and MSNBC. Hi, Beth. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Can you talk about the Sanders coalition first? What was surprising about the Nevada results in that respect, and what was different from the past?
So as we've seen Bernie Sanders over the years, his group of most devoted supporters have been basically college students, younger people, a smattering of sort of young minority voters, although that actually was kind of fairly late in coming as well. We only saw that starting to happen in 2016. This year in this Nevada caucus, in the first diverse state of the early contest, we've seen voting in Iowa and New Hampshire, of course, which are largely white and kind of an older population. In Nevada, Bernie Sanders got a whole wide, diverse group of voters that we did not anticipate. He got support from so-called moderates. He got support from some people calling themselves more conservative Democrats. He got a heavily minority vote from both the Latino community, which we expected, but also a fairly good showing from black voters. So he's starting to broaden in a way that I think a lot of political analysts had not expected. The whole rap on Bernie was that he sort of had a ceiling to his support, and this Nevada result suggests that he does not.
One of those breakout numbers is 54% of Latino voters, first place in that category by far, and when there are so many candidates, getting a majority, a solid majority, over 50% in any category is big, and for somebody who has at times had a knock, fairly or unfairly, of not getting voters of color, he got 54% of the Latino voters. He also came in first among women as well as men. Sometimes he gets that knock as being a gender-based candidate. He came in first among both college and non-college educated voters, came in first in every age group under 65. And back to something that you said, Biden came in first among African Americans and those describing themselves as moderate, but Sanders came in a close second among both of those groups. Notably, that means he beat Buttigieg and Klobuchar among self-described moderates. How do you explain that?
Well, a couple of ways. One, that with the fractured field, with all those so-called moderates still in the campaign, you know, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, you know, that group is going to split up a lot of the voters. But what we're seeing is just a consolidation around Bernie Sanders that people did not expect, did not anticipate, that he is more popular among a broader group of voters this time around than he has been in the past. We did not necessarily see this coming. On the other hand, we only have one state to measure this by at this point. So the real test is when we go into South Carolina, which votes on Saturday, and then the Super Tuesday, just the following Tuesday. This whole notion that he has broadened his appeal will be thoroughly tested. And we can't base everything on just this small number of states that voted so far, but we will know very shortly whether this is real.
You've been traveling, covering the campaign. You were in Iowa. You were in New Hampshire. You were in Nevada. Anything you can bring home as sort of a different vibe in Nevada from the first two states that voted?
Well, it's always fun to go to Nevada after the two very cold, sort of bleak winter states where winter is very bleak, Iowa, New Hampshire. Nevada is, you know, full of young people. It's full of energy that you don't see in those other states. Many people speaking Spanish, heavy Latino population. And yes, we saw a lot of excitement around Bernie Sanders. Now, keep in mind, this was, of course, a caucus. Bernie Sanders has typically done very well in caucuses in the past anyway, so it sort of favored his brand of politics. But you could definitely see people having a real excitement around him. I mean, this was not just kind of the Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton contest back from 2016. This is Bernie Sanders versus a whole lot of people in this case, but he's as popular as ever, folks coming out to his rallies. And, you know, years ago, Brian, I was told by the great political reporter from The Washington Post, David Broder, trust your eyes. And you have to trust your eyes with Bernie Sanders. These rallies are real. These rallies are suggesting something's going on that you have to pay attention to. We certainly saw that with President Trump in 2016. Right. We saw that with Barack Obama back in 2008. When you see that kind of surge of energy around a candidate, you have to take it seriously.
And yet it's always hard to know how much the true believers who show up at a rally represent a larger electorate in terms of, is this a statistical representation of what's going to be out there? But you're right, we certainly saw it in 2016 when so many pundits dismissed the Trump rallies as just the true believers and said, well, it doesn't matter that Clinton wasn't attracting big crowds at her rallies. The voters are going to be out there. And of course, we see what happened, at least in electoral votes. Last week's debate was hosted by your network,
yes,
NBC. And not just on cable, but also on regular NBC, which I think is one reason you had almost 20 million viewers, which is an unbelievable number for any kind of political primary debate. It's almost as much as watched the Oscars a couple of weeks ago, which might make it the third most watched television show of anything all this year so far.
Yeah, we were very excited about that.
But the reviews afterwards were that Elizabeth Warren did so well in that debate, and yet she didn't finish in the top three and didn't get enough popular votes for any delegates in Nevada. How do you account for that?
A couple of things. One, there was already significant early vote ahead of the debate. So folks who had already voted and then tuned in to see Elizabeth Warren, well, they couldn't change their vote even if they wanted to. So that was part of it. The other thing I would say, though, is Elizabeth Warren certainly gave a very impressive performance, but she led the group of folks on that stage really sort of training their fire on Mike Bloomberg, not on Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, we went into the debates, you know, we said this on stage, Lester Holt said this on stage, two things have changed. Bernie Sanders has emerged as the nominal frontrunner, and Mike Bloomberg is on the stage. Those are the new elements to contend with. So the folks on the stage could have made a choice. They could have decided to go after Sanders, who is, you know, kind of at this point starting to show signs that he's going to do very well in Nevada, but instead everybody trained their fire on Bloomberg. So that's going to potentially change this week in South Carolina. There's going to be another debate tomorrow night, yep, hosted by CBS. Mm-hmm. And if Sanders is to be stopped, these other candidates, his rivals, are going to have to sort of take a deep breath and do something they haven't wanted to do thus far, which is really go after him.
And let's talk about Bloomberg and that debate. One thing I mentioned at the top, that it's already Super Tuesday because so many people have voted early.
That's right.
2 million plus people. And a lot of those people voted before the debate when Bloomberg, you know, by all analysts' accounts, didn't do very well. And I saw in a Morning Consult poll that his net favorability rating went down by 20 points after the debate among people polled. That could change, of course, with a good showing tomorrow. Any poll is a snapshot. But did you see that after the issue of non-disclosure agreements was so prominent for him in the debate, he announced a couple of days ago that he will now release three women who work for his company from their NDAs? I'm just curious if you expect that to neutralize the issue in tomorrow night's debate.
It hasn't neutralized the issue at all. In fact, it gave Elizabeth Warren another chance to sort of go after him and say, well, why not release the women, all the women who might have NDAs from their agreement? So, no, that's not going to neutralize anything against Bloomberg. The real question for Elizabeth Warren this time, though, is she going to go after her good friend Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, not Mike Bloomberg, is halting Elizabeth Warren's momentum. And the only way that she can get back into this is to take off after him. And we know they've sort of had this detente throughout this entire campaign. They really haven't gone after one another, certainly on substance, on issues. They had that little sort of contretemps around the issue of whether he told her a year ago that he didn't think a woman could beat President Trump. And that played out a couple of debates ago. But on substance, on issues, they really have stayed away from one another. The question is whether Elizabeth Warren basically says, this is now or never, I have to do it.
What do you make of Tom Steyer doing as badly as he did in Nevada? Also, zero delegates, despite spending two-thirds of the total ad money that was spent in that caucus.
Yeah, I mean, that's been sort of the Tom Steyer story all the way along. He did not do well in Iowa. He did not do well in New Hampshire. This is just not a candidate that anybody seems to be warming to particularly. However, I will tell you, Brian, South Carolina may be a different story. He was in there advertising when no one was on the air in South Carolina. He spent a lot of time campaigning there. He's made a big investment in building his campaign around communities of color in South Carolina. So he potentially could do fairly well. He got onto the debate stage in South Carolina because he was polling well enough to get him in there. He didn't make our debate in Nevada, but he did make it in South Carolina. So there's a chance that we could see a decent showing from him on Saturday in South Carolina. Of course, that is Biden's firewall. Joe Biden has been talking about South Carolina as the place that he's sort of going to come back into the running. He's setting up sort of a high standard for himself, given that Tom Steyer has been campaigning there so aggressively, and because Bernie Sanders has been on the rise.
There was the news last week that the nation's top expert on election security, a government official working for the Director of National Intelligence, told the House Intelligence Committee that Russia is again going to try to interfere, or is already trying to interfere, in support of Donald Trump's reelection. But then it was also reported that that report to the Intelligence Committee also included Russia being interested in helping Sanders. Now, I want to play an example of the difference between how Trump reacted to Russia reportedly trying to help him and Sanders with respect to him. First, here's Trump.
He said today that Putin wants to be sure that Trump gets elected. Here we go again. Here we go again. Did you see it? A story. Aren't people bored? It's disinformation.
It's disinformation. And now here's Sanders.
Whether Trump recognizes it or not, or acknowledges it or not, they did interfere in 2016. The intelligence community is telling us they are interfering in this campaign right now, in 2020. And what I say to Mr. Putin, if elected president, trust me, you are not going to be interfering in American elections.
So if Sanders and Trump are the nominees, I guess that's a preview of one of the dynamics between them.
You know, President Trump has never accepted the notion that Russia did anything to help him in 2016. He's certainly pushing away the notion that Russia will be helping him in 2020. I mean, honestly, listening to those two sound bites, I mean, one almost can't believe that it's the president of the United States who's denying it, and the sort of insurgent candidate who is stepping out and saying, we will not accept this. But that's the dynamic that we've been in now for quite some time. The thing I'm interested in learning more about, and hopefully we will soon, is what exactly our intelligence community is seeing in terms of what the Russia is trying to do for Bernie Sanders. We still don't know that.
How do you expect this to play in the Democratic debate tomorrow? Do you think other Democrats will bring this up and try to hang Russia on Bernie in some way?
My guess is probably not, but it was definitely sort of a bit of a downer for Bernie Sanders' campaign to get this news the day before Nevada. I mean, he suggested personally, and certainly a lot of folks, his supporters online, were saying this was done on purpose, this was leaked out on purpose to somehow taint the results that were going to come in Nevada. Nobody's really saying that anymore. His win was so clear and so large. It's impossible to say that there was some sort of nefarious agent out there helping this happen. You know, I mean, I guess I'm going to contradict myself here. The folks on that stage tomorrow night need to stop him. And if one of them decides that bringing up Russia is worth doing in that light, perhaps we'll see it.
Beth Fooey, senior political editor for NBC News and MSNBC, thank you so much for starting us off today. Back on the road with you, huh?
Yes, next weekend.
Thanks a lot, Beth.
Thanks, Brian.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation, too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.